Good evening. My name is Susie Alvarez, and you're tuning into CKLN 88.1 FM. The name of the show is Word of Mouth. We're here today. It's Friday, March the 19th. We are joined in the studio by OCAP Radio, as well as No One is Illegal. On tonight's show, you'll be hearing from the South Asian Women's Rights Organization from Scarborough about their struggle for quality child care during the No One is Illegal feature at 6:15 p.m. It's coming right up after the headlines. And then at 6:30 p.m., keep it locked for OCAP Radio's regular report from the front lines in the fight against poverty. But as I said before, we're going to start with the headlines, and this comes to us thanks in part to Democracy Now! And other alternative news sources. And today marks the 7th anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. On March the 19th, 2003, the United States began dropping bombs on Baghdad as thousands of U.S. forces poured across Iraq's borders. 7 years later, the occupation continues. In that time, as many as 650,000 Iraqis have been killed, with the number of wounded unknown, and now Iraq is suffering the worst refugee crisis in the world today. According to the United Nations, more than 4.2 million Iraqis have fled the country, many of them to neighboring Jordan and Syria. Another 1.9 million are internally displaced. And a new oil law in Iraq has opened the doors to multinational corporations to start selling Iraqi oil. Privatization of state industries has resulted in the layoffs of tens of thousands of workers. There is almost no social security or social programs, and extreme poverty among women is at 80%. According to Yanar Mohammed, president of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, who was interviewed yesterday on Democracy Now!, women have lost significantly under the American occupation. Secular civil rights laws were replaced by Sharia law. Furthermore, Iraqi law now enshrines ethnic division with quotas for different religious groups. And 7 years after the invasion, the U.S. occupation of Iraq continues. The U.S. has vowed to cut the number of troops in Iraq in half to 50,000 by August, and a full withdrawal is scheduled to occur by the end of 2011. But last month, the top U.S. commander in Iraq said the U.S. is preparing contingency plans to delay the withdrawal of all combat forces if violence or political instability increases in the aftermath of this month's parliamentary elections. And the Guardian of London is reporting former Prime Minister Tony Blair, who played quite a role in the invasion of Iraq, has received payments from a South Korean oil firm with extensive oil interests in the U.S. and Iraq. The company, UI Energy Corporation, hired Blair around the same time its Iraqi consortium struck a controversial oil deal with the autonomous Kurdish government. Blair denies his dealings with the company were linked to Iraq. His dealings with UI Energy were kept under wraps for 20 months after Blair convinced a British government committee it should be kept secret due to market sensitivities. And a Guatemalan court has approved an order to extradite former Guatemalan President Alfonso Portillo to the United States on money laundering charges. A federal grand jury has indicted Portillo for allegedly using U.S. banks to embezzle millions of dollars taken from Guatemalan coffers. Portillo, however, alleges he's the target of a political witch hunt dating back to his opposition to the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. He said, quote, I was the only Central American president who didn't sign the letter supporting the U.S. war and invasion in Iraq. And my argument was that my country had already been invaded in the past, and signing a letter to support another country's invasion was against my principles. I remember the ambassador and counselor's words at the time, revenge will come in the future. And the extradition request is the instrument of revenge. Portillo's lawyers are appealing the extradition order. And we have some news coming from Indonesia, where new evidence has emerged today that Indonesian government, through the notorious Indonesian military unit known as Kopassus, is behind the torture, abduction, and assassinations of activists, especially in the Aceh region. Local Aceh police told U.S. investigative journalist Alan Nairns that they have arrested Kopassus members on many charges. The U.S. government has announced its intention to increase military aid to Indonesia and to resume funding for Kopassus after a 12-year ban on the basis that the unit is no longer committing atrocities. Activists are working furiously to scuttle the deal, and U.S. President Barack Obama, who spent some of his childhood in Indonesia, was scheduled to travel there but has delayed his trip. And we move over to the Dominican Republic, where 8 people were reported injured and several were jailed as student protests succeeded in shutting down universities in San Francisco de Macorís and Santo Domingo last weekend. The Amin Abel Student Liberation Front was expelled from the campus of the Autonomous University of Santo Domingo last Friday after federal authorities and university administrators announced they had discovered a cache of arms, including machine guns, rifles, and hand grenades, in a basement room in its campus. Members of Falabella have denied any responsibility for the weapons found, and they have said that these were planted by authorities to discredit the group and to distract attention from the aims of their protests, which were ignited by poor infrastructure, lack of government funding, and inadequate services at the 40-year-old San Francisco de Macorís campus, which serves about 15,000 students. Student demonstrators in Barahona protested similar conditions at their own campus and expressed their solidarity with the protesters in Santo Domingo. The Student Front was formed in 1977 and was named in honor of Amin Abel Hasbun, a Dominican citizen of Arab descent who had been involved in opposition to the dictatorship of Rafael Leonidas Trujillo and to the coup against democratically elected President Juan Bosch, and had supported the constitutionalist uprising in 1975. He was assassinated in 1970, apparently by the National Police, during the 30-year regime of Joaquín Balaguer. The Autonomous University of Santo Domingo traces its origins to the first university founded in the Americas, the Universidad de Santo Tomás de Aquino, founded in 1538. And back to Canada, where First Nations and Inuit people are speaking out against the coming shutdown of the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, a nationwide network of community-based healing initiatives. Federal funding for the foundation, which is run entirely by Aboriginal people and serves 134 community-based programs, will be cut off on March the 31st. Instead, the government has committed additional funds to Health Canada for targeted programs for 2 years. Critics of the government's move point out that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, established after the Harper government apology for residential schools, is set to start hearing evidence on April the 8th. Without the support of programs set up by the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, fewer people may be willing or able to tell their stories through the commission. Commission's chair, Justice Murray Sinclair, agrees. He said, quote, "We felt the Aboriginal Healing Foundation's funding should be continued at least for the term of our commission," unquote. More than 150,000 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children were placed in more than 130 residential schools across Canada from the late 1870s until the mid-1970s. They were funded by government and run by churches and destroyed families and communities. Many students were forbidden to speak their native language or practice their culture at the schools. Many were also physically, sexually, and psychologically abused. And I think that concludes our headlines segment for tonight's show. We're going to go over to the other side of the glass and welcome the members of the No One Is Illegal crew as they segue into their segment.